This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is the Aftershock Central Podcast, episode 19. I'm Martin, Jack's here, Ronnie's here.
Hello.
And, I got done revising timelines. That's over. I lost my job.
Yep.
Did you screw up the present day because of your actions in the past? Is that why my life sucks so bad?
No.
I know I was supposed to be, like, famous. That was my intention, and it didn't work out, and I'm blaming you.
Now, see, what I did is I revised the timeline so that Aftershock would announce a bunch of books.
Okay.
Good plan.
See? You see how I did that?
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Master of the segue.
Little dog.
Damn it. So, yeah, we're back all together once again, friends.
Hey, man.
We just got done talking about Marvel for 12 minutes. We're not going to put it on the podcast. It's fine.
Talking about Gold Balls. Hey, never has a character like Gold Balls received more conversation than it has amongst like our community lately. I've heard Gold Balls mentioned left and right.
Have you?
By you.
Well, you know. Whenever there's balls,
you're there. Better be gold.
Anyways, enough with the Marvel talk, Jack. We're here to talk Aftershock. Get with the program.
I'm gonna edit all these midgets out into Ultimate Marvel Podcast.
I have to record with Nick to do have a Marvel Podcast episode come out. So, you know, Nick and I take over everything. We did Rebirthically. We did Marvel Podcast. We did Aftershock Central.
You did do Aftershock, did you? Yeah.
Yeah, we sure did. We did our. We talked about socks and sweaters for 20 minutes.
That's because you can get Nick excited about anything. Whatever subject you bring up, man, he's fired up about it.
I know. It's awesome. It is awesome. Nick's the best. So let's talk some news. How about that?
Go for it.
Where do we want to start? You want to start with Garth Ennis?
That's cool.
So Garth Ennis is a new book, guys.
Yep.
It's not a war book.
Right.
It's like a James Bond book.
Yeah.
But with clones.
Yeah.
And secret societies. The title's weird, though. I wonder how they came up with that. Jimmy's Bastards is what it's called. Did they announce a full creative team on that, or just a writer?
Just a writer, as far as I know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm looking at it now.
They might not have anybody else yet. Don't they usually pick the writer and then let him build his team or whatever?
Yep. So it's Jimmy Regent is the main character. That's what it's Jimmy's Bastards. Mm-hmm. And he is Britain's number one spy. Super charming, super handsome, with a license to kill. And he finds out that there's a secret organization that came out of nowhere that are after him. And the organization's comprised of hundreds of men and women who look exactly like him. Now I wonder, do the women look exactly like him, but with boobs?
That would be kind of weird, wouldn't it?
That'd be kind of weird.
It's happened to Spidey, though.
That's true.
He wears a mask.
Well, yeah, but the girls don't.
You guys go talking Marvel again.
Spider-Gwen wears a mask.
But she's not a Peter Parker clone, though.
Or
she's a Gwen Stacy. Oh, Lord.
I guess you'll find out at the end of Clone Conspiracy. that's true. That's cool though. I'm definitely looking forward to this one. I know I wasn't too thrilled about Dream Eagles until I actually read the book. But this looks a little more up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of sci-fi, a little bit of espionage. Should be cool.
Yeah.
Should be cool. The other book that was announced also has an odd title. Eleanor and the Egret.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is
that's the one I keep seeing that preview image for.
Yes. It's written by John Layman with art by one of my favorite of all time, Sam Keith.
Yes.
Did you guys read the Max ever?
Oh, yeah.
God, it's so good. Jack, have you read the Max?
I don't think so.
Man, it's like the weirdest freaking thing you'll ever read. But the art is just so cool. And I'm very excited to see Sam Keith on something else. Because I'm buying the... they're reissued the Max. They're doing the Max Maximized.
Uh-huh.
It's like a recolored, remastered version of the original from the 90s. And... but other than that, like, I don't know what else Sam Keith has done recently. I'm sure he's done something else.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's like a sprinkle here and there. It hasn't been anything. Right?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think he's had any, like, new books. And then John Layman's the creator of Chew, which you guys are Image fans, so I'm sure you've read Chew.
Mm-hmm.
So two odd guys coming together to create a very odd book. It's about an art thief in Paris who partners with an egret, which is kind of like a flamingo, I guess. And apparently the flamingo gets bigger and bigger the more they steal stuff.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. Sort of Pinocchio-ish.
Sort of Pinocchio-ish.
Come on. How does not a magical llama that gets bigger and bigger sound awesome?
Are comic creators getting like they're running out of ideas?
No, I don't think so. I think they're coming up with really cool ideas.
Okay.
That's how you differentiate yourself, dude. You know, you don't want to do the same crap everybody else is doing.
Yeah, but if I pitched this, what you just said, if I pitched that, you'd be like, Jack, you're an idiot.
Well, actually, no. I'd be like, what? Tell me more. I like really weird crap. I was talking to Daryl earlier about, what's that show coming out? Legion?
Yes.
Yeah.
Here we go with more Marvel talk.
I know, man. It's Marvin. He's on a Marvel kick. He can't help himself.
I'm wearing my Marvel PJs right now. But, when I watch that trailer, I'm like, there's no way that anybody is going to watch this show. This show's going to get canceled in, like, six episodes. Yeah, because, you know, it's like, it's not quite based on the comic.
Yeah.
And then the look of it is just very out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has potential.
Oh, I'm excited to watch it.
I think it has the right channel too, or the right not channel, but studio to put it out.
Yeah. Anyways, Eleanor and the Egret seems like one of those things where, like, you look at the cover and you're like, okay, and the title doesn't tell me much about it, mm-hmm. but the concept really intrigues me. And again,
yeah.
Sam Keith, so, you know, whatever
hey,
Sam
Martin.
Keith was at, I'll buy it.
Sam Keith, last book that he did
mm-hmm.
was Batman Through the Looking Glass.
Oh, wow, that's been a while.
And then he did art on Batman 38 in 2015.
Huh. Might have to go and reread that. Oh, I forgot all about that.
I remember that issue.
Do you?
No. I've read maybe 10 Batman comics my entire life.
Oh, dirty words.
38, was that right before Endgame or around Endgame?
Yeah, I'm looking at the cover. I'm looking up the cover right now.
Yeah, because I think Bunny Batman was 41 or 42, so that had to be around Endgame.
It's actually Endgame part 4. Part 3 was 37, so...
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I love Sam Keith. So we'll see how this book goes. I like that that Aftershock is taking chances with the type of story mm-hmm. Just based on the creator.
Right.
You know, and I know maybe for some people just the creator isn't enough, but I think for me it is, and this is a great creative team.
Yeah. So
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Definitely sounds interesting.
That one is, well, I guess April solicits aren't out yet because Diamond's slacking. But it's coming out April 5th is the first issue. So that's pretty quick.
Yep.
This must be done. Done.
And we got Blood Blister coming up around the corner, too.
Yeah, Blood Blister comes out on the 1st of February, so that'll be exciting.
That's one that I wasn't that interested in until Phil Hester explained it, and now I'm extremely into it, interested in it. Did you hear the interview with him? Were you on that? You weren't on that,
I was not on that, but I did listen. It was quite good.
Yeah, he really sold that book.
I recommended it to a lot of non-Aftershock fans, just based on the stuff that Phil was talking about. So
yeah, that's good. Good guy.
It wasn't Paul, was it?
I did not talk to Paul about it, no.
Okay, good.
Paul hates everything, so. Until he has, like, that one weird day where he's like, okay, I'll read it. Like, he hates X-Men, and all of a sudden, like, he loves Age of Apocalypse.
Yep.
He's got an opinion or two.
Or like last night, he read Captain America, and now he's like, I love Captain America.
Yeah, let's do a Marvel podcast.
I was like,
Captain America.
Yeah.
But he's not reading the current stuff. I wonder how he feels about that.
He hates it. I'm sure he does. Come on. That's like the given answer, right?
Yeah, yeah, he'll hate it until we all quit talking about it. And he's like, oh, you guys should go read this. anyway, so yeah, so Blood Blister's coming out. That's pretty exciting as well. There's a few other things coming out that haven't been announced, though.
Yeah.
I know there's a... Well, Adam Glass, right? So that's Rough Riders coming out again.
Mm-hmm. Rough Riders book. Station.
Yeah. And there is a new Justin Jordan book to be announced.
Ooh. Mm. You know anything else?
I know nothing else.
Now, it's not Rough Riders Nation.
No, not Nation, because Nation's a one-shot.
Nation's the free comic book day one.
Yeah. There's a new team... Our new Rough Riders like, team coming
it's
out.
It's like season two or whatever.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's like Riders in the Storm or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
But it's a whole new cast of characters, right?
I don't know about that.
Is it?
I don't know. I'm asking.
I don't know if we have enough info on that yet.
Yeah, I
remember that that preview image they had, and they had all these different potential Rough Riders from all these different eras that led me to believe that, hey, they could expand this storyline into multiple different generations and just say, okay. I mean, even modern day, they could do a modern day Rough Riders. I think they had a couple people. I don't have it in front of me, but
that's Nation though.
Right.
See, but Riders in this.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Because I thought that the cover that they previewed was. Well, maybe they didn't. Maybe it was just the cover of the last one where they're all in the old-time wooden coffins. I thought that was which was the current team. But what's his name? The gangster guy. You know what I'm talking about? They threw out that Teddy threw out the first.
Oh yeah, I can't remember his name. Yeah.
Because I saw that they were previewing that he was going to come back and be a key point in it.
Yeah, you're right. I see the cover now, and it's the same characters.
I want to make a recommendation for Rough Riders fans. I know, Ronnie, you watch the show. Jack, I don't know if you watch it. Well, I don't know if you've seen it, Ronnie. I'm assuming you did. Timeless? Have you guys watched that?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched Timeless.
You cannot say a comic or a show that Ronnie...
Well, that's all I do anymore is eat, sleep, work, and read comics. And watch TV shows on my lunch break. Air quotes, lunch break.
But Rough Riders gives me that... Timeless gives me that Rough Riders feel. It's not quite the same. But like I was watching... It just came back from the mid-season hiatus this past week. And they went back to the Chicago World Fair. And Harry Houdini was in it, and they teamed up with him to chase after H.H. Holmes, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with H.H. Holmes. But he was pretty much like the first American serial killer.
Yep.
He built the hotel at the time of the Chicago World Fair, and it had like all these secret tunnels and like gas nozzles in all the rooms and stuff. Like, so people would go to the World Fair, and like nobody would ever see him again.
Yeah, it's American Horror Story season is about H.H. Holmes.
Oh, is it?
American Horror Story Hotel, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll catch that. But yeah, anyway, that show's gave me that that Rough Riders feel, because they always have historical figures that they team up with. And matter of fact, in the Houdini episode, Roosevelt was in it.
Awesome.
Yeah. That was kind of they tricked the team to go after Roosevelt, but it was actually they were after somebody else. Actually, Thomas Edison was in the episode.
Wow.
Because Thomas Edison, J.P. Morgan, and Ford are members of the secret society or whatever that they're trying to change the future against. So those three were part of the secret society, and Harry Houdini kind of helps the team get out of that. So
sounds just like Rough Riders.
See, we said that since episode one, like Black Eyed Kids and Rough Riders TV shows. It's yeah, like a layup.
You. I'm telling you. It'd be amazing. So anyway, timeless. Well worth watching. I know Mike loves it.
Yeah.
I do too. Is that it for the news?
Yep, I think so.
Wow.
I mean, that was a lot of news.
Like, that is a lot of
bam,
news.
Bam, 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 you know?
Compared to the usual. And I know that this week is Comics Pro.
Yes.
The summit for retailers. And Aftershock is presenting there. There is a Comics Pro exclusive variant for Blood Blister.
Yep.
So if you're into variants, you should be on the lookout on eBay for that or contact your shop.
Isn't there also Animosity, the Rise one too, or is it just Blood Blister?
I thought that Rise was just the book that's coming out next week.
Okay, so it's the what is
I
it?
I can't remember. You might be right. There might be a Stealth. No, Stealth Freeze is the regular cover.
Okay.
Yeah, I know for sure that Blood Blister one, because I was on Twitter and my buddy Chris, who runs the Boom Addiction podcast. He goes to the same shop that I do, and he was tweeting at me and our shop about it. So we'll see if I can get a copy of it.
But, cool.
Yeah, Blood Blister.
Oh, Animosity of the Rise does have a Fried Pie Comics variant.
That, yeah, okay. That's what it is.
So I was confusing the two. So
cool.
So it's just Blood Blister on Comics Pro.
Yeah. I don't think Fried Pie, that's not an actual shop, is it? Or
yeah, I thought so.
I thought they were part of, you know, it might be. For some reason, I thought Fried Pie was part of an organization. And they just they put out variants. Kind of like Four Color Grails was.
Oh, because they're like Second and Charles or whatever?
Yeah, that's what it is. Second and Charles, yeah.
Okay.
That's like their variant imprint, I guess you could say.
Okay.
I do see it. Yeah, the Animosity of the Rise, Brian Stealth Freeze.
Because, see, I thought I was confused about that because I thought the Rise was just a digital exclusive.
Hmm.
When it first announced. But,
interesting.
I mean, I'm glad it's not.
Yeah.
For the people that read floppies and whatnot.
Floppies.
Floppies and gold balls all around.
Cool. You guys ready to talk about some books?
Yeah.
No.
Jack is unprepared.
No, I'm all ready, man. I got Black Eyed Kids number 10 right here in front of me.
All right, cool. So let's talk about Black Eyed Kids number 10.
And Jack. Silence.
I didn't say I read it. I said I had it.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just kidding. I've read it. I have read it.
Now you've made Joe angry. Black Eyed Kids number 10. Let's see. Joe Pruitt. Simon Kudransky again. Anything you guys want to talk about on this book?
it brings a lot of questions answered, but then, kind of like it always does, raises more questions.
Good point, yeah. I think that's one thing that Joe's doing really well with this book, is, you know, you have like an issue with big reveals, and then you have a couple issues with a lot of questions. And then you'll have the one issue that answers all those questions and then leaves you hanging with some more. Mm-hmm. You know, so you want to pick up the next one.
Right.
I think it's really interesting. What's the black-eyed kid that killed his family?
Michael.
So I think the stuff with Michael is very interesting because he doesn't seem to be as hypnotized by the God King child guy.
The boy king, as
everybody else is, as all the other black-eyed kids are. You know, because like he let his sister go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They met at the house, and he was like, "You got to get out of here before the other kids come." So I wonder what his deal is.
Yeah, he was in the very first issue, right? Remember?
Yes.
That's when he turned into a black kid. I think it was issue number one, and he's sort of gone. He's made appearances throughout the comic, but he hasn't been as central, seemingly as central as like the Boy King or some of these other people.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been threaded throughout the entire issue, and now he's, you know, becoming a little bit more relevant. I think Joe's been subtly kind of preparing him for something big as this goes down.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
He has to be a big factor going forward.
I agree. And, you know, I know this book hasn't been the biggest seller, but it seems like at least among the Aftershock community, everyone really digs it. I know for sure, you know, the three of us love this book, right?
Yeah.
And I'm glad that it's getting, it's been given the room to breathe, right? Because.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I know what you're saying, because, you know, like, the rose is still pretty before it blooms, but then once it blooms, then it's awesome.
Look at this guy.
this a guy professional, with the metaphors. Right? Yeah.
I don't know if that was relevant or not, but it sounded really cool.
Well, I mean, like at the beginning, you know, it was a whole bunch of questions, where I could see like a common reader might not get the whole complexity of the issues and dive deep into it and just, you know, it'd be a skim read.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
I did that at first. When we first started reading this, I wasn't digging in to it as deeply as I needed to. And once I did, though, it did what you said. Really opened it up.
Exactly. See, once you actually read it, then you liked it. but yeah, like, we're so used to, not us, but, you know, comic fans in general, so used to just getting those quick stories,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to get the book out, kind of, or, you know, to get them ready for trade. And so you end up missing a lot of subtleties. And it seems like when writers are given the space to actually tell the story, regardless of whether they do it in the, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 issue arc format, but when they can tie in the overarching story, it tends to make the book better.
Right.
If you stick with it, right? Like, you'll definitely have those questions because you can't have all the answers given to you right away.
Right.
Whereas if you want to do just like a popular book, then you're going to get those things answered because people want the answers. And after a while, if you don't give them answers, then they just kind of leave your book.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't have the patience to wait, you know, 6, 10, 15, 20 issues to get an answer out of the book.
Right.
And that just kind of leads to some of the crap that we get in comics now.
Yeah. But like with Meredith, we've seen her from issue 2, I think, on.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't. We know kind of her past, but it's still kind of a mystery, too.
Right.
And with like Gus, he still has stuff going on. So we kind of know a little bit, but we just know enough to tease us that we want to know more. And I think that's the mystique of it, because once the curtain is all the way pulled back, then, you know, that mystique leaves, I guess.
Right. Well, and it's harder with an ensemble cast, too. Because if you have only a few characters to talk about in your story, then you can get to some of that stuff quicker. And, you know, what Joe does with this book is you have a big cast, but they don't all appear in every issue.
Right.
So some issues focus more on, you know, like some might be more about Michael, some might be more about Gus, some might be more about the family, some might be more about, you know, this crazy black-eyed kid that was in jail.
Right.
Some are more Meredith-heavy, you know, whatever it might be.
Right.
And I think that's a good way to do it for people that are interested in actually keeping up with the book.
Yep. Because, like, we didn't see the cop in this one at all.
Right. And, I mean, he's only had, like, one big issue where he was the focus.
Right, yep.
Right. Even though we've seen him in a couple other issues.
Right.
So I think that's good, and I think that's the way to really do an ensemble book well. Again, doing ensembles is hard, right? Because you have a lot of characters to keep up. You have to interweave a lot of the storylines in between characters and make them make sense to the overall plot of the book. But yeah, I really dug this last issue because there's a lot of things coming together. And it seems like in the next one, we're going to get some heavy action.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Which I like. Like the exposition and stuff is great every couple issues.
Right.
But you also want to do something action heavy. But it's not like so like Walking Dead does this, right?
That's funny.
You have like an exposition thing, and then you have heavy action, and you have people dying, and you have exposition. Like, it's always the same formula. And this book doesn't quite follow that.
Right.
But I think with Walking Dead, when they do the exposition stuff, it's pretty boring. Whereas here, even through the exposition, you're kind of like at the edge of your seat wanting to know what's going on, right?
Yeah.
The title that does that, well, that comes to mind when you explain it that way, for me, is East of West. Do you read that?
Oh, I love that book.
It'll go through, it'll have tons of action, mm-hmm. and then go have a couple issues that are almost lulls that seem like, you know, it's cool because he's built such an interesting world, mm-hmm. which Hickman's great at. But then nothing really happens through like two or three issues, but you got to have an ongoing. Some of these Aftershock titles are the runs are so short that you don't have time to really let it grow like that. But Black Eyed Kids has had time to do that.
Well, that's kind of the game you play though, right?
Yeah.
Because you with a small publisher, you don't know how many issues you might have, right?
Yeah.
If the book doesn't catch on, you might only get the 4 or 5 to tell your story.
Right.
Right. So you might have to switch gears halfway through and find some kind of conclusion.
Which, see, I said it was funny because you said The Walking Dead, but like when I read Black Eyed Kids and I see Gus and I read Gus, so if they ever do a TV show, mm-hmm. I'm going to put it in Joe's ear to cast Chad Coleman as Gus. So you hear that, Joe? Chad Coleman as Gus.
That's hilarious.
But, I mean, because I just see, like, that voice and that mystique. Mm-hmm. He didn't really do that with Tyrese on The Walking Dead, but...
Yeah.
He has on other stuff that he's been on, you know, so...
Yeah, I can
like
see that.
Like, his commanding voice and, you know...
Right.
So that's... Because, you know, you do that with everything. At least I do.
He's been pretty good on Arrow.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys aren't watching that. I think a lot of people are watching that.
I did.
No, I'm only like 2 or 3 episodes behind, but okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he's good in that.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's Black Eyed Kids. Do we need to rate this?
Do we?
Is it guaranteed that every time it's at least 4 stars?
Yeah. For me, it is. I mean, there's books that come out like a week that's on my stack that's like I grab and read right off the bat.
Mm.
And this is always one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's our scale? It's been so long since I've done ratings. What do we do? 1 to 5?
Yeah, 1 to 5.
We do the Netflix scale.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'd say 4.
Yeah, I'll say 4. I expect the next issue to be higher.
See, I'm going to go a little bit higher than you guys, like with a 4.25, because this is Meredith and her brother's like first encounter.
Let me ask you, Ronnie, how much Netflix do you watch? Do you ever see 4.25 stars on Netflix?
Well, that's because I can't click a little half or a quarter of a star.
And you can't give quarter stars here.
I can do what I want.
they show quarter stars on Netflix. You can't give it 4 and a quarter, but you see 4 and a quarter once it averages out.
That's because they must have terrible programmers that don't know how to round up or down when you get the average rating. Anyways. Cool. Black Eyed Kids was awesome. Let's talk about Shipwreck.
Awesome. This was my favorite issue so far of Shipwreck.
I agree.
Because I didn't, the first two, I know you guys loved it, but it sort of felt to me like just being odd and weird for the sake of it, and the story wasn't really going anywhere. I couldn't make any sense out of the story, but 3 kind of tied everything together.
Now,
which is good for me.
This is, how many issues is this? Is it 5?
Oh, is it a mini?
The mini?
I thought it was a mini.
Yeah, it's a mini, but I don't know if it's 5 or 6.
How do you know that?
I thought I had read that somewhere.
Because it doesn't say anywhere in the... Didn't Phil tell us that?
Yeah, you might be right. I think Phil said that.
We always have this problem with Aftershock Comics. Maybe they don't determine it.
Captain Kidd is 5.
Right.
Because the last panel... of 4 said next issue, final issue.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm.
But like Dreaming Eagles, you knew from the very first issue, it said on there 1 of 6.
Right. Mm. Anyways, let's get back to this book. It doesn't really matter if it's a movie or not. Like I said, I don't care. I just want books. I know what you mean though, Jack, because this issue gives, I don't want to say a lot of answers, but it does give some answers, and it actually manages to tie in some of the weird, wacky stuff that we've seen in the first two issues into some kind of understandable story.
Yeah. Are we doing spoilers?
Oh, yeah, we'll spoil this.
Yeah.
When did this come out? 2 weeks ago? Yeah, I think it's been that long enough.
Yeah, so it's alternate realities, right?
Well, is it? Because I'm not quite sure. And that's kind of what I mean by it gives answers, but maybe not. Because that's kind of what I thought originally. Like, this was a different place. Either a different planet or a different alternate Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to the stuff where they start talking about the project that this character is working on, because he finds the dead body of one of his one of the other scientists, right, that was working on the project with him,
right?
And that's when you get the stuff that happens before what we see in the opening issue.
Yeah.
So it kind of gave me the feeling that maybe none of this stuff is actually happening. That a lot of this is in his head, because when he ends up meeting that inspector again,
right?
That we saw in the first issue, and he's talking about what did he say? Something about forward. Oh God, let me find it. Welcome back, Ronnie.
Well, they're trying to find another planet that could sustain life, right?
Yes.
See, I thought we were recording Ultimate Marvel podcast, so now I'm like looking at this trying to recap my memory, because Ronnie likes to set me up for failure. I didn't know we were doing Aftershock. or I would have like read this right before we jumped on, but somewhere in the comic, somebody mentions that this is an alternate reality. Don't they like say that kind of point blank?
Okay, so towards the end of the book, right, after we find out that there's a dead body inside this rock thing in the middle of the road,
right,
and we find out who the dead body is, Shipwright does talk about, there's like a flashback scene mm-hmm. of when they were working on the project right. Forward Escape.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so what they were trying to do was find a way to get to other planets.
Because
mm-hmm. I guess there's something going on. My assumption was, maybe I read too much into it, but something's going on Earth where people need to get the hell out. And that's kind of what this project does, is mm-hmm. they're trying to find the new home for people. And they find this spot in space that's kind of like a black hole.
Right.
And when they go through it, they found this place that was exactly like Earth.
Another Earth.
Right. And it actually turns out to actually be Earth, like an yes. alternate reality Earth. Yes.
Like a parallel universe.
Correct.
See, I'm glad that you brought that up. Because guess what? You know when Shipwright is in the hotel?
Yes.
And the little kid's there reading the book?
Yes.
It's called The Alf, right?
Yes.
Which is the actual real book.
Yes.
About that whole scenario.
Yes. So that's why I thought that this isn't happening.
Mm. That doesn't work for me. You might be right. You might be right, though. But the reason I like this issue was because that flashback, I took that as canon. And for me, it helped me understand issues 1 and 2.
Oh, it still helped me understand issues 1 and 2, but it seems to me, all right, so when he meets the inspector, he says, how is your forward escape working out? So when I read that, I'm thinking because he's moving forward, trying to escape all these crazy fucking people. Excuse my language. Do I need to beep that out? I'm not beeping that out. So he's trying to get out of here.
I thought it was escape Earth.
No, when he meets the inspector says, how is your forward escape working out, Dr. Shipwright?
Right.
Okay, right. And so when we get to the flashback scene, we learn that the machine that he's building is Project Forward Escape.
Right.
Okay, except when the inspector says it, it's all lowercase. When they're talking about the project, it's uppercase. Cause it's
so it's
a
just
project
a play game. On words, basically.
It's a play on words. So I do believe that the project is real, that they're actually building this machine to get out
right.
of Earth. But I think this story isn't taking place on an actual alternate Earth. I think what is going on here is what's happening to him and his team as they're going through this black hole.
Yeah.
To get to their final destination.
Like in their subconsciousness.
Correct.
So the inspector would be the AI that's talking to him or whatever, trying to help him, or maybe even his anchor of his conscious to help him.
Interesting.
Get
it
through.
It could be either one.
Right.
But I think it's just the process of going through this black hole is just distorting their mental reality. Okay. And so it's like a dream, you know, like when you have dreams, people analyze dreams, and I don't believe in like dream meanings. But I do believe in analyzing your dream as a way to, for your subconscious to kind of make sense of your reality.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, I don't know, like people have meanings, like birds means like you want to be free or something, whatever that means. Okay. I don't buy that. Right. But like, let's say, you know, you had a really tough day at work and, you know, like Ronnie, you do like IT stuff, right? So mm-hmm. let's say a bunch of D-bags called, okay, mm-hmm. and gave you a tough time. Well, you know, your brain needs to process that and turn it into a memory. So that night, you dream about like an alien invasion. And there's a bunch of aliens running at you with guns, okay?
Right.
So, like, that's the way that your brain processes
right.
and makes something out of your experience.
Right, yeah.
Okay? Because your brain thinks different. That's such a weird way to say it.
No, yeah, it takes
something. I gotcha.
Not abstract and make it.
There
whatever.
You go. There you go.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when like there's different learning techniques, right? Like you can, if you turn something into like a song, you know, you might memorize something better.
Right. Right? Yeah. Or like, just like when you listen to a song that you haven't heard forever, then it might take you back to that time or whatever.
Right. Absolutely. You know, so like sound cues and visual cues really help you understand memories and bring them back. And I think that's really what the same thing that's going on here. I think all this stuff is kind of Shipwright's way of understanding everything that led up to the creation of the project and them getting out of Earth for whatever reason. And he's trying to make sense of it in his head before he gets to this place.
Interesting.
Including the birds and the
including
dream
birds. Yes.
Is that how you read it, Ronnie?
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty... Yeah, especially since I noticed that the book that the kid was reading, because like I said before, right, even way back in like issue one when we noticed like the spiders and then the dead spiders, right? Mm-hmm. We know that Phil just doesn't draw stuff just to draw stuff.
Correct.
So like everything has the meaning in there. And it wasn't... And you know, at first it could just be just letters on a book. Well, if he's doing that, then just make it little squibbly lines, right? And not a title itself. So, and then we actually look at it and it's almost to the T of like what they're doing, what the project is.
Yep. And then if you look at like the backgrounds too, like when he's in this place, there's nothing in the background. Like, you might see the birds and some smoke, maybe a couple rocks, but that's it.
Right.
And then when you have the flashback to the project, like, there's actual backgrounds. Like, you're in the place where they're building this machine.
Yep. And, like, every room that he ever goes in, in the Farscape or whatever, the walls or the rocks, whatever's in the background, is always cracked.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the bar. There was broken windows and, you know, stuff like that. And, like, here at the hotel, even, like, in the lobby of the hotel, there's cracks everywhere.
Yep.
And then you go to the actual his actual room, and then there's cracks everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So here's how I read this, because I picked up on those things too, but I read it a little bit differently. And even though your guys' explanation, I think, works probably better than this, but... what I took from this was that they're trying to escape Earth. They're trying to find somewhere that's inhabitable, and they figured out they can't go forward to go somewhere, so they were able to figure out a way to go side parallel and jump to a parallel Earth, like we already mentioned. But in my mind, I immediately went to like shows or comics, like The Flash, for example. In the show, when they jump to an alternate universe, the concept is that the multiverse concept means that there's so many different like iterations of the same thing that some of them are just naturally just unusual and weird, and there might be some that seem normal, but then there's other ones that just seem really odd compared to the world, the Earth you live on. So the one he made it to is all those weird things. It's just a variation, a really unusual variation of the Earth he came from. And I was expecting him to say, okay, this is not inhabitable the way we hoped it to, and maybe we need to go try to find a different Earth.
Well, see, but that's why this book is so good, is because you can definitely have both interpretations and they both make sense.
Right.
So it really depends on what it is that you're bringing along with you that gives you the different meaning on what the actual story is.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, Ronnie brought up the Aleph, the book that the hotel clerk is reading.
Norman Bates.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I've never read the story, but I am familiar with the author. So I'll tell you what the Aleph is. The Aleph is a point in space that contains all other points. Anyone who gazes into it can see everything in the universe from every angle simultaneously, without distortion, overlapping, or confusion.
So this might be something even more obscure than what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think just based on that book, you kind of, at least for me, I have to find the more odd solution to what's happening here.
Yeah. Right.
You know? Yeah. But you can definitely read it as a straightforward story where he actually is in an alternate Earth.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yep.
So I think at this point in time, like halfway, let's say, through the story, it could go either way. But you know, that's why I love Warren Ellis, dude.
Yeah.
Like he can do these kind of stories.
Yeah.
And just based on my reading of other Warren Ellis things, I can't see it as just an alternate Earth.
Yeah. Good point.
Yep. And we finally get the backstory for the main quote unquote bad guy, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really like the backstory, but we finally get to see who he is instead of just the name.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, and that sets up another building block of why does Shipwright not like him, or why does that guy not like Shipwright? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We saw that their ideas weren't the same.
Right.
But, or their philosophies, I guess, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's got to be more. And like you said, knowing Warren Ellison, whatever, that's just like a little seed. There's got to be more coming soon with that backstory between the two of them.
Yep. Awesome. How about we rate this story?
Definitely.
I'll go first.
All right.
I'm going to give this 10 out of 5 stars. Can you do that?
Nope. No, you can't do that. If I can't give 4.25, yeah, you're definitely not getting the 10.
No, I'm going to give this a 5 for sure. This book is just incredible.
I'll do a 4.5. It's good. I would have gave the other two. Before reading 3, I would have gave the other two a lot lower. Right.
We need to rewind like 20 minutes where I said there are no partial stars.
None at all?
That's fine. You guys can have your partial stars.
4.563.
Oh my god. Repeating.
And I emphasize that last 3. It's critical to my scoring algorithm.
No, it's great. Like the story for me is perfect. The art is just incredible. So I have to. Sorry, Joe. But Shipwreck. Whew.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's really
good. This is a great team. Phil Hester is this might be my favorite, as far as art tying into a story, has to be one of my favorite current titles. The art's perfect for this.
I hope they work together again, even if not on another Shipwreck story, but something else. Although I guess Ellis is going to be a little busy for a while.
Yeah.
Because he's doing the Wildstorm for DC.
Mm-hmm.
So, which of course I'm going to read because Wildstorm was my jam, especially the Warren Ellis stuff.
Yeah.
Go read Planetary now. Anything else we want to talk about?
Can mention Alters. Did we talk about Alters already?
No, we didn't.
I don't think we have.
But I got to give a shout out. I know that you guys were unprepared and didn't read Captain Kidd number 4.
Yeah. No, but shout out to Brent Peoples.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
that's our boy.
And honestly, I know you guys haven't read it yet, but you know, we were kind of in the meh area for Captain Kidd for like the first 3 issues.
No,
give or take.
Let's correct that. You guys were. I think I liked it the best.
Okay.
Continue.
But I mean, okay, anyways, I think 4 has been the best issue for me.
Cool. Good. I look forward to reading that then.
Yeah,
and it might have to do with, you know, Peoples on the pages too, but
the People's Champion.
The People's Champion.
I hear he's working on something with somebody.
Yeah, way to be
discreet.
Yeah,
I mean that's pretty discreet. He's working on something with somebody.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. He put out an image.
Spill it.
No, I'm not spilling anything.
Oh, you just totally teased all our listeners.
I'm not spilling anything because even I don't know anything. Like he told me, okay. God, it's been like a year probably.
Yeah.
He's like, don't tell anybody. I'm gonna work on this thing with this person. And yeah. I was like, oh my God, tell me more. He's like, I can't. So honestly, I know nothing.
Right.
But I'm very excited for what these two people can do.
Yeah.
I love both of them.
Yeah. So I kind of know, but like, because I talk to him probably once or twice a week, I would say, like, message-wise.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not going to be like Daryl and Chris and, like, throw out, I'm best friends with him, like Tom King style, you know?
We have beers every Wednesday.
No, but, like, I do message him quite often or whatever, and he messages back or whatever. But I don't always, like, pry. I don't want to be that guy.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
You know, if he's talking about Captain Kidd 4 or how you liked it or, you know, whatever, I'm not going to be like, oh, well, since you didn't ask, how about this unknown project that you're doing? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So...
Yeah, Brent's awesome, dude. He sent me one of those Exo Manowar prints that he did for Christmas.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I got home and I was like, "What the hell is this?" It said Brent Peoples. I was like, "Oh, I know that guy." And I opened it up, and sure enough, yeah. So that's cool. Let's wrap the show up, guys.
You don't want to talk altars?
Oh crap! Well, let me go pee then. Hang on.
Oh. At least he didn't take the mic with him.
Yeah.
So what are we going to... Are we just going to rate it? I feel like we talked about altars.
We didn't talk about altars because that was...
We didn't talk about it at all?
That we were planning on it, and then that's when, like, the holiday season started.
Yeah.
And then we didn't record, and then Nick and Martin did the invasion thing.
I wanted to mention it because this is my favorite Aftershock title right now.
Is it?
Yeah, especially with the last issue, with the his brother finding out that his brother has powers also.
Yep.
Which he has the perfect powers for his disability, being able to move stuff with his mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was a big reveal.
Yeah. Yeah, if you were paralyzed, what better power could you have than, you know, I can move things with my mind. It's perfect.
Right. It's like, yeah, this is only 3 issues deep, and it's really complex as well.
Yeah. Now, his brother also picked up on the fact, picked up on the transgender stuff, because he said in one of the panels he wrote a message to him. He said, "You're a chick, I'm a cripple, sucks to be us."
Yeah, well, that's because it goes in with his powers, right?
Yeah. What? Oh. Oh, you mean, like, mentally?
Yeah. Because I just thought maybe... Well, I guess not. I guess I just assumed that he could read minds and move stuff with his mind. Like, it's like his whole thing was... The whole brain part was overhyped.
Yeah. That works. I didn't think about that.
But then again, I mean, if you're in the chair... And you're just observing all day, then you notice things that other people don't. So,
right.
I mean, then that's not really a superpower.
Yeah, well, could be either.
What do you think, Martin?
I don't know what we're talking about.
The brother in the altars that's paralyzed.
Oh, yeah.
We were saying that he has the perfect power. Being able to move things with your mind is the perfect power for somebody who's paralyzed. And Ronnie was wondering if he also can read minds because he figured out that his transgender transformation and nobody else knows yet.
So you know how when we read Altars 1, I said this is like what made X-Men good back in the day?
Yep.
Yeah. So the more I read this, the more I agree with that statement.
Yep.
And her brother is like Professor X.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, or like, maybe not quite. I guess the guy that runs the mutant or the ultra organization would be like the Professor X type guy.
Right.
I know what you're saying.
The power set with her brother is similar.
Yeah.
And I totally agree. I think not only he can move things, but he can read minds, and he can affect the way people see and think of things as well.
Yeah.
I think that's... Yeah, yeah, yeah. I definitely agree with that statement.
Because Jack was saying that this is his favorite Aftershock title.
Right now.
Yeah, it's definitely up there for me.
So if...
Top three for sure.
If he can move things with his mind, why can't he walk? Because he should be able to move himself, right?
But what would be the point of that? I mean, he can move his wheelchair. Wouldn't that be less effort than...
If you can move a wheelchair, why can't you move your legs?
Motor functions?
Yeah. I mean, which is harder? I would think he should at least, even if he can't move his body the way it's designed to move, mentally he should be able to make it move and do what he wants it to do.
Sure, but why bother with that?
It wouldn't be as interesting as a story, I guess, but...
Well, I think what Martin's saying is, like, that's simple stuff when he can do extraordinary things.
Well, because but he's limited because he's stuck in a wheelchair. That's...
Well, yeah, but...
But he's not limited because of his power set.
Ramps and stuff to get down the stairs. He can't even be in the same room with him.
But say, like, Emma Frost, for example, right? Where she's throwing out the projection the whole time.
By the way, hubba hubba. Continue.
Yeah. But, like, it takes most of her concentration just to do that projection.
So don't waste it on things.
So, yeah, don't waste it on moving your legs and walking back and forth.
Wait, stop. This is Marvel talk now, but what about in Death of X with that whole thing with Cyclops?
Well, obviously she's like a level 5 mutant, but...
Anyways, back to Aftershock.
But, I mean, that was just my example. It's like it's too exhausting or too much of a strain for him to do that than to do something else.
Well, what I'm getting at is he's at some point there's going to be a showdown with Chalice and what's the Matter Man? Is that the villain's name?
Yep.
And he's going to need help. So I'm thinking his brother could be potentially a big help to help him defeat this guy. But if he's not able to get to that place where the guy is, it's sort of going to be tough.
Hmm.
So we'll see. We'll see. I want to see where it goes because right now he's been. And maybe he's just putting up a little bit of a front because he doesn't want people to know what his powers are. But so far, he's sort of limited in his house, and he still has people helping him to get around and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but see, I think that's by choice, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Maybe he's putting up a front.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it might come out in later issues that he's done things outside or influenced things outside of that environment that's not even aware of, really.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yep. By the way, my favorite panel in this issue is the obligatory panel of penis coverage.
Yeah.
When Nine and the other alters show up to catch that one alter guy that's turning.
Yeah.
And his face is blocking Nine's areas.
Yeah.
I love when they do that in comics.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you were talking like when he's daydreaming at work and he's drawing donkey.
This is why Martin loves Gold Balls so much.
Mm-hmm. Do love me some Gold Balls. All right, let's rate this one up then.
I'll go first.
Go ahead.
I'll go first. I'm giving it a 4-5, and I'd like to go higher, but I've reserved my 5s for something that's incredibly special. But this is right under that, so 4-5.
Fair enough.
4-5, 4.75 maybe even.
Wow.
Point.
4.732897.
No, that's a little bit too high.
Ronnie?
I'm going to give it a 4.5 also, just because like you said, the excitement's still there. Like each issue feels like it's a new revolution, plus the art on it is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give this a 4.333 repeating. I agree with everything that was said. I love this book. Every issue is tons of fun. There's not like a whole lot of depth per se, but that's not to mean that the characters aren't deep.
Right, right.
It's just like the exploration is slow and steady, but a lot of it revolves around the story with these alters, you know, and Octavian and Matterman and all that stuff. So, yeah, and the art is great. And we might have somebody that works on this book on the podcast soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess that's it.
That is it. I mean, I'm good. If you guys are good.
I'm always good.
I don't know about that.
This has been the Aftershock Central Podcast with Martin, Ronnie, and Jack. You can find us all on the Twitter machine, of course, at Jack Sutherland, at Ronbot316, at Geekvine. Show it Aftershock at Aftershock Pod, and you can email hello@nerdlegion.com. And if you're an Aftershock fan, be sure to head to the Aftershock Comic Fans Group on Facebook, where Ronnie posts all the Aftershock news before anybody else does.
Sometimes the news is so good we post it twice.
That's right.
Within the same like 30-minute span.
Sometimes.
We'll catch everyone in a couple weeks.
Yep.
Yep.
Bye.